It's 8:15 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the local news hour on KPCW. Pacific Corp, which does business in Utah as Rocky Mountain Power, has received the additional state approvals and will move forward now with major wind and transmission expansion plans. On the phone with details about how this can assist Park City and Summit County's net zero carbon emissions initiatives, I have company spokesman Dave Eskelson. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning.
So tell us about the plans here to add new wind energy.
A couple of years ago, we determined in our long-range planning that by creating a repowering of our existing wind and letting bids for new wind projects, we would be able to install a significant amount of wind power, both in upgrades and new projects, and taking advantage of the production tax credit, we'd be able to do that at a very attractive price for customers. So we are well underway in the regulatory permitting of those projects. We have a lot more work to do in terms of local land use and some other siting approvals that we need to get. But we're well on the way to construct those projects during the 2019 year and have them ready to provide service to customers by 2020.
Okay, so we're talking about more than one project, huh?
Yeah, it's basically three pieces. There is new wind projects totaling about 1,150 megawatts, and we're repowering the wind projects that we already own, most of them, not all of them. That is, there'll be new turbine sets and new blades on the wind turbines themselves to increase their efficiency and capability. And then there'll be a new 140-mile transmission line in Wyoming to help move this power to where it needs to go. And a lot of that will be coming to Utah because Utah is 44% of the company's business.
So tell me, I mean, what does 1,150 megawatts of power look like? I mean, what does that do for us?
Well, that's roughly equivalent to the hydroelectric capability that we have, and looking at the proportion, we're looking at about 15 to 20% wind and renewable. Hydro's right now about 12%, natural gas 24%. Our coal plants, about 45% of the energy that we supply to customers.
Yeah. In terms of powering homes, so, I mean, what does that do?
Well,
how many households would it serve?
Yeah, wind is a little difficult to determine exactly, households. I think if you look at the energy that they would generate over a year, probably about enough for about 400,000 homes.
Okay. So is this what the company did with its big central Utah solar farm, kind of build it and then sell that power to customers, to people who wanted to buy in, or this is just one more source for Pacific Corp?
This is part of the overall resource mix. This is part of the energy that we supply to all customers. What you're talking about are Blue Sky installation near Holden, Utah. That's a subscription program. That's our subscriber solar program. And that was offered specifically to customers who wanted to buy into a share of capacity for that project. So that's a little different. Basically, the wind power that we're talking about here today goes to all customers.
Yeah, and I guess why wouldn't you do it the same way as you did with subscriber solar and do subscriber wind?
I think because the subscriber solar farm was a little bit higher cost, and our regulators wanted those programs to be done on a voluntary basis, so that customers generally were not subsidizing the cost of that solar installation. In the wind projects, we had to go through a regulatory review to ensure that those projects were in the public interest and could be supported by the rates of all customers.
So wind is,
and that was the reason. That was the reason for our news release, because we've passed through the regulatory review for those projects.
So wind is cheaper to build and maintain than solar is, huh?
Well, generally, it kind of depends on the installation, the location, what the land use. Situations are generally wind has a little higher availability than solar, but there again it depends on the installation. What we're finding is we have some very excellent wind sites in Wyoming. The availability of the wind is excellent, and it provides an excellent capacity factor. That is, of all the hours in the year when they're available to generate, how much do they actually generate? So those projects have been particularly valuable for the company. We've been generating since about 2006 a significant amount of wind power in that area.
So since this will be available to all ratepayers, and all ratepayers, I guess, are paying for it. I mean, can you give us the idea of what it's going to cost, and will customers see a rate increase as a result?
Well, we committed not to do a rate increase through 2020. We believe that because of the availability of the production tax credit, that will substantially write down the costs of both the repowering and the new wind projects, and the cost of the transmission line. So while we can't really determine right now an exact impact on rates, because this is only one small part, customers can be assured that for the next about 3 years or so, there will not be a rate increase.
Okay. So can you talk to us at all in terms of what this might mean for, as Park City and Summit County, including Salt Lake City and Moab, some of the Utah municipalities that have made it their goal to have net zero carbon emissions here in Summit County and Park City by 2022? How will this, if at all, help them achieve that?
Well, it really is a little different than the work that we're doing with those communities. The work that we're doing in those communities has to do with a particular tariff to enable them to meet their renewable goals. And we are working with the Utah Public Service Commission right now to design that tariff to enable those communities to meet the renewable goals that they set. And that's a relatively complicated pricing situation, but we think it's certainly doable, and we're proceeding with developing that pricing structure so those communities can meet those goals.
Okay, so we expect to have that wind power into the grid system as soon as 2020, huh?
Yes, we have to have it completed by 2020 in order to qualify for the production tax credit. So we're very focused on making sure that that is completed by that date. We're on track to do that.
All right. Hey, can you give me any updates about possibly burying the lines in the Heber Valley?
Well, we're working with Heber Valley Light and Power. They're the lead project manager of that, because they need a new delivery point in the Heber Valley. We've faced some significant questions about whether that's really needed. So we're working with elected officials there some alternative proposals. They wanted some estimates of underground costs. So we're just working through the process there.
Okay, so no updates necessarily. I guess you're also, Rocky Mountain is also renegotiating the contract with Heber Light and Power?
What contract are you referring to?
Well, in terms of how you guys do business with each other.
Well, we provide transmission services to a certain degree to Heber Light and Power, but Heber serves Heber City and Midway, and they're a municipal power company. We have you know, contractual relationships for transmission services to all our municipal power customers. I'm not personally aware that any contract with Heber is under negotiation.
Okay. Well, I guess...
But I wouldn't necessarily be aware of that.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess, so in terms of just when we find out, I mean, I guess Rocky Mountain Power needs to expand. At what point, I mean, do you have to make a decision about moving forward with what you want or what the Heber Valley community wants?
Well, it's mostly what the Heber Valley community needs. Right now, there are two feeds into Rocky Mountain Power customers in the Heber Valley, and also that includes Heber Valley Light and Power. If either one of those supply lines goes down for any reason, the other one, you know, the one alone, is not sufficient to supply the entire valley. And that's a particular concern in the winter months. And so one of the things that we're doing for our part of the proposal is trying to complete a loop so that both of those feeds are connected, and so that if either one of them goes down, we can serve all of our customers with the other supply line. And, of course, Heber's needs are a little bit different but related. They need another delivery point for transmission to serve their customers. And until those additions are in place, that area does not have the same kind of reliability that most of our other customers enjoy.
Yeah, and I guess I just residents from the Heber Valley would say, well, you know, that those larger power lines were proposed for the Park City area because we needed the power, and now it's kind of been pushed back to the Heber Valley area. I mean, it's all of our power, right? I mean, it's not because those are connected.
That idea is really based on a misunderstanding. We did do some work directly related to reliability in Park City a few years ago. But that was not, you know, that was not particularly bound up with service to the Heber Valley. Although the what the company is proposing would improve reliability for the entire region.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it's mostly the Wasatch Back area, you know, directly around, you know, in the Heber Park City area. So it is related, but it's specifically for what customers are going to need in that area. And without that additional capacity going into that area, in certain times, or if there's trouble from a windstorm, a winter storm, or a wildland fire, the single feed from either direction is not going to be able to supply all the customers.
Right. And I certainly understand that burying the lines means more money up front. But when you talk about windstorms and ice storms and, you know, potentially firefighters, it sounds to me that burying the lines would make a better decision. It would prevent that from happening, no?
Well, it depends. Underground service presents its own reliability issues. For transmission, bury transmission, generally it's a vital enough concern that you have to make it redundant, which greatly amplifies the costs. And also underground service, when something does go wrong, it usually takes much longer to fix. That's why most transmission of the voltage that we're talking about is constructed overhead.
Okay. Dave, I appreciate your time. Anything else you wanted to add?
Only that we're really excited to proceed with the renewable advances that we've got, and we look forward to you know, serving our customers with continued low-cost renewable energy as part of our resource mix.
Great. Dave Askelson is spokesman for Rocky Mountain Power. Thanks for your time this morning.
You're welcome.
8:31 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, if you have driven between Park City and Salt Lake this summer, you have no doubt noticed all of the construction work on Interstate 80. More is about to begin east of Park City on August 1st. On the phone with an update on all of that construction work, I have UDOT Travel Information Manager Lisa Miller. Good morning, Lisa.
Good morning.
So let's start with plans to renovate the Tollgate Bridge. This is exit 150 just east of Park City, kind of between the Tollgate Canyon and Promontory area. So what's happening here starting August 1?
Well, it's a 70-day closure that's going to continue through mid-October, and we're extending the life of the bridge and enhancing safety for drivers. So what to expect? Daytime work activities between 7 a.m. and 5 p.m., there may be some intermittent night activities as well and some lane restrictions. So ultimately, this is going to improve the pavement and make a better ride for drivers.
So this doesn't impact travel between Park City and Wanship. It just impacts those living either in Promontory and Tollgate trying to access the interstate?
Well, we definitely recommend that everyone plan ahead, regardless of whether you're a resident of the area or if you're someone that's just traveling through the area. So crews are going to continue working on I-80, actually from Tooele County all the way through Salt Lake and Summit counties. Work is anticipated to take several days at each one of these locations as far as the bridge work is concerned. So it's always a great idea to plan ahead and use the UDOT traffic app or website and turn on the construction layer or the congestion layer and see what you're in for when you're heading out onto the roadways.
Okay. So, again, those traveling through on I-80, they'll be, we're talking about single-lane closures, so traffic will always go through.
Correct.
Will people have to reroute? You know, years ago when we saw some other work on that bridge, I mean, people traveling, from the Tollgate area would... I don't know. They had to, cross over. It was really a roundabout way to get back to Park City.
So what to expect at this time is daytime work activities from 7 a.m. to 5 p.m., but there could be some intermittent nighttime activities. So at this time, we're expecting there to be lanes open and possible full closures, but at this time, it's going to be mostly daytime work activities only.
Okay. But drivers who usually access the bridge are going to have to use other on and off ramp options. Is that what you're telling me? No?
No, not at this time.
Okay. Also, August 1st, Parley's Canyon is going to be closed overnight. Tell me about that.
So Tuesday, July 31st at about 8 p.m. through Wednesday, August 1st at about 6 a.m., we're going to have a westbound closure of I-80 from milepost 141 through 137, which is Jeremy Ranch to Lambs Canyon area. And local residents can use Kilby Road to travel between Jeremy Ranch and Parley's Summit during that closure. Now, Wednesday, August 1st through Thursday, August 2nd from 8 p.m. until 6 a.m., we're going to have an eastbound closure at that same location. So drivers can use I-84 through Ogden or U.S. 40 to U.S. 189 through Provo Canyon as alternate routes if you're going a long distance through that area.
So that's a big roundabout way to get to where you're going. How do you get this word out? You're telling locals now, but I mean, if you're just happen to be driving through, from Kansas or something.
We use our traveler information network pretty extensively, and we do coordinate with Nevada DOT as well as Wyoming Department of Transportation. And any information day of can certainly be found on our UDOT Traffic app and website, on our Twitter feeds, as well as Waze. We have a partnership with them. So we try to get the information out in advance as well as we can, but we certainly use the social media and the other information with our variable message signs over the highway for the specific time of the closure.
All right. And this is being done because of the wildlife bridge?
Why? Yeah, so there's going to be some bridge girders that are going to be put into place, and we need to have a full freeway closure for those bridge pieces to be put into the specific location.
Okay. Can you give us an update then on that wildlife crossing there, basically at the top of I-80 and Parley Summit?
Sure. The work is going on throughout the summer, and we're expecting there to be a late summer, probably early fall, completion of that project. So the crews that are placing the support beams for the new wildlife overpass will have to close the freeway during that time, but we're thinking that these projects are really going to extend the life of the corridor and help prevent the need for more extensive reconstruction in the future. And this wildlife bridge area has been a project for us that we've been really focusing on for quite a while. So we've temporarily removed and we're reusing some of the wildlife fencing in that area in other project limits. And temporary construction fencing has been installed and is in place to keep wildlife off of the roadway as much as possible during construction.
Now, is this crossing for wildlife only? I had heard some concern that UDOT was concerned that bicyclists or hikers might think that it was a thoroughfare. I mean, is it for everybody and every animal?
Well, it's intended to keep the animals from crossing the freeway, certainly, and the right-of-way fencing and the wildlife fencing helps to do that. But the bridge is going to be intended for wildlife crossing. We work with the Department of Natural Resources to ensure that we're selecting the best locations for those wildlife crossing areas. But I suppose it could be a trail connection for others that are interested in using the bridge. It's not going to be something that's going to be fully accessible for folks on bikes or hiking. You know, there won't be any trails across the bridge, but if it's going to be a connection in that direction as well, I suppose that's a possibility.
Okay. And then in terms of the climbing lane being added to westbound Interstate 80, what's the update with that?
Well, the climbing lane project is moving forward as well. We're doing that in conjunction with the wildlife project. And when there are closures or anything of that sort, the information will be on our website and our app as well. We're thinking the truck lane project is going to be completed most likely this year in November.
Okay, and then all back to normal. And then what about construction there on the noise wall and being done because of the climbing lane? Mm-hmm. Has that even started?
Well, so it's being done in conjunction with the climbing lane project. And in order to construct the new truck lane and noise wall, we did remove that wildlife fencing, as I mentioned. But the noise barrier is being built near Jeremy Ranch to mitigate the freeway noise for nearby residents. So that project will be in conjunction with that climbing lane and, again, complete in November.
Okay. I guess I just, you know, you're driving 65 miles an hour. It's hard to see what's going on. So it has started, and we should probably start to see some vertical construction going on here soon.
That's correct.
All right, and any updates with regard? Are you all finished with the work done on State Road 248 and 224?
Yep, most of the projects in that area have been completed. It's something that we're keeping our eye on just to ensure that the pavement is going to be have integrity for years in the future. The Renovate I-80 construction projects are really a year-long, multi-year project. And the SR-248 project is something that we're keeping our eye on as well.
All right. How does somebody get more information? I went to, like, Renovate I-80, searched that, and I had really old news on that page.
The UDOT, excuse me, if you Google UDOT Renovate I-80, all of the information is completely up to date as of this morning. I just checked it before our phone call. You can also check the UDOT Traffic app or website. It's a free app, and it's been downloaded almost 700,000 times by Utah residents, so we're really excited to have that resource. The web address, it's kind of long for your listeners, is udot.utah.gov/renovate-i-80 if they're looking for more information on that project specifically, or you can always call the project team at 888-528-9675.
Okay, yeah, I must have had a wrong search because this one is a lot different, this page I've just pulled up. So, okay, Lisa, anything else you wanted to add?
Make sure you always check before you head out, especially during holiday weeks like we have with this Pioneer Day this week. Check our UDOT Traffic app and website, and make sure you always buckle up.
All right, Lisa Miller is the Travel Information Officer with Utah Department of Transportation. Thanks for your time this morning. It's 8:44. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, as we reported back in June, the owner of the private business Mountain Transportation Network, Tim Rubin, rolled out an app-based service to provide a low-cost Kimball Junction circulator to compete with what he says is an ineffective system being operated by Summit County. Sam joins me now in the studio with an update. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So give us the background first here. You were going to offer, I think it was, what, dollar rides, free rides anywhere between Summit Park to Trailside to Canyons Village?
Correct, yeah. So it's a dollar per ride. And it goes basically from Summit Park, Silver Creek, Jeremy Ranch, Glen Wild, Parley's, pretty much all the way down to by the Hyatt Place, so Sun Peak, Silver Springs area as well. And 100% of that fare actually goes right back to, we've selected the People's Health Clinic as our nonprofit.
Okay. So this was to get people basically from their homes to a bus stop. Is that how it's working?
That's the main goal, would be, you know, a broader micro transit, truly that first mile, last mile, kind of difference between that and the Kimball Circular that truly is more of like a bus line. There have been, I'd say, probably it's about a half and half. Most of them are using it to get to the bus terminal. The others are using it, you know, to get to Willow Creek for a soccer game or to get to the pharmacy. So more of a point to point, but we are seeing more of an increase going to the actual bus stops.
Yeah. So how's it working?
So far, so good. You know, we have our growing pains just like any other business because the vehicles that we utilize for this service are all for hire vehicles that are properly licensed, especially during the summertime. You know, we're busy with a lot of our own rides and the other networks that are also participating with us as well. So we do have some sort of availability during peak hours, but I don't think that's not to be expected. I mean, same thing with the Kimball Junction Circular. They only have two of those going around. So we are working on increasing the availability of vehicles.
Okay. And so somebody would know by going on to the app and seeing that, what, there's not a vehicle available?
Correct, yeah. I mean, it'd be probably just like when Uber and Lyft first came to town and there were a limited number of vehicles here. So it would say that there's not a vehicle available.
Yeah. So I'm sure you've tracked the number of passengers. What are you looking at? I mean, on a daily basis?
It varies. We're seeing a lot more early morning, pretty much kind of before the circulator runs, later in the evening as well, during those peak business hours. Anywhere from, you know, 15, 20 people per day. Some of the peak days we've had close to 50.
Yeah. So what's the cost to you on this? I mean, it's got to be expensive, or the cost to the driver. The driver's getting paid hourly?
The drivers actually are getting paid through gratuity. So what we've actually found is that it's not as much from the Kimball Junction Circular side of it, but what we've seen is people that are utilizing our service, you know, they're making comments to the driver. You know, I normally would pay $10 or $12 to Uber. I like supporting a local company, a local driver. You know, so they might give the driver that $8, $9, $10. So the drivers are actually doing very well as far as the gratuities go. Company-wise, again, because we're supplementing this, you know, through the app. So our fixed cost is basically the operation of the app. You know, we don't really necessarily have fixed costs from either a labor or operational side of it, because it's like Uber. There's not really technically an office. There's not someone dispatching the rides.
So they're basically your Uber drivers? I mean, do they work for you or no?
They're all independent contractors, but they're different, you know, different companies. So as long as you are a fully licensed for-hire vehicle in Park City, you have the ability to participate in it. The only caveat to that is we also do require an airport badge, so that means that they have to have a fingerprint background check with the FBI and the TSA.
Yeah. So how is this network different or different than Uber or Lyft then?
I think a couple different ways. One, obviously some of the cost perspective of it. We give back to local nonprofits. All of the drivers are knowledgeable and local of the area, so you're not going to get into a car and say, I'm going to No Name, and the Uber driver looks at you and, you know, true story, and they'll say, you know, every place in Park City has a name. What's the name of the place you want to go to? They're going to know, you know, different ways. So, for example, when the bridge is closed or when there's an accident, they're going to know how to navigate around it and not necessarily, you know, have you sit in traffic.
Yeah. So how much money is going to People's Health Clinic?
Right now, we just topped over $500.
And again, that comes from what?
From the dollar per ride. So 100% of that goes directly to them. I mean, our goal, you know, obviously we'd love to have more, you know, going back to the People's Health Clinic, and hopefully over time that will increase.
Okay, so basically that first dollar, that that just gets written off. So
correct. It's a marketing expense.
All right. And then any other money that's collected goes to the driver.
Correct.
Okay. In terms of, unless you have multiple people in the car, I guess, how is this serving the overriding goal of creating less traffic on our streets?
I think it's a couple of different ways. So if we're looking at like a Parley's or deep within Jeremy Ranch or Silver Creek, you know, where they just don't even have the bus service, it makes it very difficult. So in that side of it, you know, I think it's definitely something that, you know, we're bringing a lot of value. When you're looking at a Silver Springs or Sun Peak or some of the other areas or Trailside where there is a bus line, it may be more of a matter of convenience where the bus only passes by every 20 or 30 minutes, and now here's something that can come when they want to come.
Okay. So tell me a little bit more about the app that you've got and how that works.
Sure. So it's available for both the iPhone as well as the Android devices. You can visit our website, Mountain Transportation Network, or you can search either the Google Play or the iPhone App Store and just search Mountain Transportation Network, but make it all one word. You'll notice the logo is a blue circle logo with a car.
Okay. And can people prearrange a ride to a certain destination?
With the Mountain Transportation Network, they cannot prearrange a ride. It's strictly similar to Uber and Lyft. It is meant to be on demand, so you tap when you need the ride.
Okay. You had also offered to provide free transportation for the Big Stars Bright Night concert series. People taking you up on that?
Yeah, it's great. We're working with Terry and Jenny and a lot of the people with the Park City Institute. So we're doing, you know, we're shuttling some of the sponsors back and forth. That was really popular this past week with Chris Blue. We fully support them today, and hopefully with the city council being able to move back over to City Park as well. So, you know, we really like to give back to the community. And it's one of the reasons that we're actually going to be working as well with Promontory for the art festival. So we just purchased a brand new 31-passenger luxury minibus. So we're going to actually be helping to shuttle those people from Promontory into Main Street so they don't have to, you know, drive in and clog up the roads, and they can have that extra glass of wine and they can enjoy the art festival, especially Friday night for the locals' night.
Okay. Anything else, Sam, you wanted to mention?
I don't believe so.
Okay. Hey, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.